Are you familiar with the GE Triduction Oven?
I don't cook very much.
Sure. I got you. New York, third wave feminist, college educated, single and pretending to be happy about it, overscheduled, undersexed. You buy any magazine that says healthy body image on the cover, and every 2 years you take up knitting for a week.
That is dead on.
What, are you going to guess my weight now?
You don't want me to do that.
Baldwin has had a long and successful Hollywood career, starring in such films as The Hunt for Red October, Glengarry Glen Ross, The Getaway, Miami Blues, and Pearl Harbor. Terry spoke to Alec Baldwin in 2003. He told her about the days when he first got to New York City. While he was studying acting at NYU, he was also a waiter at Studio 54.
By the time I worked there in the fall of 1979, it was all over. You know, no one was really going there anymore. I mean, there might be some people would roll in late at night to just as a pit stop from some other place they were going that was now more, favored. But when I worked there, it was very funny because I just, I was like Jim Nabors. You know, I was like Gomer Pyle. And I'm working at this big disco with all these people. And I go up into the balcony and some older guy in a beautiful suit would walk up to me and hand me a $100 bill and say, I want you to go to the deli on 8th Avenue and get me a box of Benson and Hedges in a box. And I want you to get me a lemonade and I want you to get me, and he had like, you know, he had his menu of exactly what he had to have. And it said, I want you to go get that for me and come back and meet me and Enrique up here, my boyfriend. And I'm going to, you know, do something nice for you. Okay, run. And I was like, so nice of you to ask me to do this for you. You know, trot off, come back. The guy would give you like $50 and a tip because he wanted to stay up there and, you know, get it on with Enrique in the balcony all night. You know, just make sure that my Brandy Alexanders keep coming. And it was just so bizarre to me because this was my introduction to all the exotic birds of Manhattan.
When you started your career, you were, among other things, the young hunk. And I think we know more about how, you know, beautiful actresses, the predicaments they're in and how they're marketed when they're young. We know more about that than we do about, like, the young leading men. What were some of the expectations of you early in your career, you know, as the young hunk?
Well, God, what I wouldn't give to be the young hunk again. It was so much easier. But for me, I think my early sense of what was good about this business was more theater directed than film directed. The first job I did was a soap opera here in New York. And I remember I was on a cast of a daytime soap with a cast where at any given time, three or four or five people were in a Broadway show at the same time. And that was how I kind of got birthed into the business, was surrounded by those people who said the theater was really the only place that you can be satisfied, you know, as an actor.
Well, that soap opera that you were on was called The Doctors. And, you know, I was wondering if being on a daytime soap early in your career helped you or hurt you in the sense that a lot of people, you know, look down on daytime soaps and think that the acting isn't the best and that good acting isn't even particularly encouraged on it. So, you know, that kind of thing might be held against you. People might almost, you know, snicker at a starring role in a daytime soap. On the other hand, some actors say it's just the greatest experience.
Well, I think, you know, it's a variety of things. One, people don't really understand the dynamic of daytime TV, which is that it evolved from radio. And early daytime television up through the 60s and even the 70s was predicated on the same formula, which is you wanted to turn the TV on Monday. And if you turn the TV on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we hadn't really proceeded too far from Monday. You know, if you missed the show on Tuesday and Wednesday, when you came back on Thursday, you could pick up right where you left off.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, every Friday program was where we restated all the facts of what had evolved during the week. So I'd say, you know, Terry, I really am glad that you have taken over Palmer Industries now and that you have – and that you and Jed are reconciling your divorce. And, you know, there was like a recap and there's a mechanism to it which is very artificial, but it was about – an audience that is a kind of a come and go audience, you know, and for me, it was a great experience.
I thought we could listen to one of your great movie scenes, and this is from the movie Glengarry Glen Ross, which is based on a David Mamet play. The movie is about salesmen who are selling this worthless land, but they have to make it seem like this land is really great and you're getting a really great deal. So the people who they sell to are mostly these real, like, naive losers. So you play the manager who sent in from the main office to light a fire under these guys and to get them to, like, to keep selling. I'm going to play part of your monologue.
Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. You get the picture? You laughing now? You got leads. Mitch and Murray paid good money. Get their names to sell them. You can't close the leads you're given. You can't close. You are. Hit the bricks, pal, and beat it, because you are going out.
The leads are weak.
The leads are weak. The leads are weak. You're weak. I've been in this business 15 years.
What's your name?
You. That's my name. You know why, mister? Because you drove a Hyundai to get here tonight. I drove an $80,000 BMW. That's my name. And your name is your wanting. And you can't play in the man's game. You can't close them. Then go home and tell your wife your troubles. Because only one thing counts in this life. Get them to sign on the line which is dotted. You hear me, you faggots?
That's my guest, Alec Baldwin, in a scene from Glengarry Glen Ross. That scene must have been so much fun to do because, well, the writing is so good. Can you describe a little bit your approach to learning and digesting that really pretty long monologue and figuring out, like, how you want to pace yourself in it, where the pauses are going to be, how dramatic to get?
Well, you know, the doing that film was interesting because the role that I played was not in the play. And Mamet had added that role to the screenplay for the movie because he felt that we needed to see the stakes raised a little higher at the onset of the film. So he added this scene and we went in there and it was an enormously difficult and unpleasant thing for me to have to do because here were these actors who I loved, Kevin and Jack and Ed and Ark, and I had to go in and really just kind of pee all over them. You know, it was just this horrible scene, you know, in terms of if you did it right, you know, you didn't want to back off. And I just didn't want to do that. You know, they were all getting along so well and all had a great time shooting together. And I walked in to shoot the scene for just 2.5 or 3 days, and because we rehearsed a full rehearsal period prior to the shooting, which is very rare. And so we did that, and, you know, you could tell it was going to be really tough, you know, because, I mean, I had to be so nasty to these people. And I left, and, you know, I came back, and they started shooting for a couple of weeks. And it was one of those things where you come to work and they're all sitting around the coffee urn and eating a bagel and laughing and having a good time. And I walk in and they're like, oh, you know, Schmucko is here. You know? And I come in and I got to, you know, they know what's coming, which is I got to just kind of singe their hair all day. But I guess my point is that doing those really tough scenes, it's not fun. You know, it really isn't fun because to be that person, you know, when you play Hitler or you play Ted Bundy or anybody you play, it's challenging, but it's not really fun. You know, I did Streetcar Named Desire on Broadway quite a while ago, and my friends would come up to me, particularly younger guys, and they'd say, boy, it must be so much fun for you to get up there on stage and get all that out of your system every day. And I said, you know, back then I was 34 years old in 1992, and I said, I realized a couple weeks into the run of the show that I don't have that much in my system to begin with. And that around the second month of the run, I almost wanted to put my arms around Blanche and say, hey, Blanche, why don't you and I sit down and have a drink and try to work this out, you know? Let's be friends. And so all of that contentiousness and all of the that kind of drama with people, it does wear you out after a while.
Alec Baldwin, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Alec Baldwin speaking with Terry Gross in 2003. Baldwin is nominated for a Golden Globe Award for his role in the NBC comedy 30 Rock.